This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
My grandmother is Vietnamese. My mother is half Vietnamese and it makes me a quarter Vietnamese. And I like to go by a Asian American, Vietnamese American, biracial player. But Vietnam is the relationship. Is really strong and it's a part of my heritage. I am Miley Jones and I play on the Vietnamese women's national basketball team.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world.
I didn't play basketball first. That wasn't my first sport. It was swimming. I really loved to swim. But since my dad's a professional basketball trainer, I was just always around basketball. But I was like, no, I want to go to the pool. And so I do remember I was 5 turning 6 and I was at one of my dad's sessions. And I remember sitting on the baseline while he was training. And I said, I was like wondering to myself, I said, I know, like I can do this. I said, how come he doesn't train me? He trains all these other kids, but not me. But, you know, I was 5 years old, so little at the time that I know, you know, right. He was wanting me to do what I wanted to do, you know, not forcing me to play basketball, just see where it kind of leads to my life. So eventually I asked him and now I'm on the national team. So just been working at it. I eventually quit swimming and I just do basketball now.
You know, I think that's a very wise move on your dad's part. To not force you or encourage you early on. Because I think it turns a lot of kids off, right?
Yeah, for sure. I see some kids today, at my dad's basketball camps and clinics and private training. And you can tell like they don't want to play basketball. And you know, it's even worse when they admit it. You know, it's, oh, well, my parents are making me da 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 da. So it kind of makes it harder because they're like, you know, it's not in their heart. You know, I asked them kids, I said, well, what do you want to do? Oh, I like soccer. You know, I'm always just outside kicking the ball. And I was like, okay, maybe it's time to play soccer. Yeah. You know, you really got to follow your heart in life. You know, that's really the biggest thing.
What does being Vietnamese mean to you today?
Oh my gosh. It means so much to me. The sacrifice that went on from before and to be able to be at this stage to really go back and see how things have changed and see how Vietnam is progressing. That really means a lot to me. And to really put a smile on my grandmother's face, my Bang Wai, that makes me really happy, especially when we get to go back together and we get to take pictures in our Al Yai. We get to travel all over Saigon and see her family in the village. So it really means a lot to me.
Did you grow up with your Bang Wai or did she live in Vietnam and you just visited her in the early years?
No, I actually lived with my Bang Wai because my parents, we lived with our grandparents. So my Bang Wai was in the U.S. Okay. And we lived for them for, oh gosh, maybe about 5 years. Yeah. Before we moved out and we my parents got their own house because my dad was still playing professional basketball. So because he was traveling all over Europe playing, I just stayed with my mom and my Bang Wai and my grandfather at their house. And so for the longest, you know, my Bang Wai, she would, you know, babysit me because my mom had to work. My grandfather had to work and she was at home. So yeah, we're like this, you know, we're really close.
How do we, as people who are professional, who we're going after the things that we love, how do we stay on that track, that heart track with our profession? Because I know it gets hard, right? How do we stay in it?
It definitely gets hard. Yeah, it definitely gets hard. And I think you just hit it right. You know, you just really said it there. It's love. You know, when you think about like little things, you know, when you love a cupcake, you'll bust your butt anyway to go get that cupcake. You know, no matter what, you know, the grocery store is full. They don't have your flavor. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. So you're trying other options. And that's similar to professional sports. You know, there's days where it gets really, really hard. You're like, oh my God, how did I do this? But it's the fact that you love what you do that helps you get up every single day and you move past those obstacles. So, you know, it's, you know, when we're in training camp and I'm like, oh my goodness. I said, I'm just sore. My body hurts, but it's that love that I have for the game of basketball that helps me get through those obstacles, because there's definitely days where I'm like, I just need a break, you know, go for a walk or, you know, just do something different, you know, go get some coffee or, you know, go outside by the pool, you know, you just have those little breaks here and there. But it's really, like you said, when you love something, you'll do anything for it.
When you say take a break, you only mean like hours, right? You don't mean like a day or a week off from the sport. You mean just...
No. I mean, I don't mean a week. A week is probably right after the season, because it's very important for your body to recuperate. That's like the biggest thing. I've never taken like a month. It's never been a month. Maybe a day or two, because when you have that day or two and you don't do any of the sport that you play or anything that you're used to or your routine or what you're doing that you love, it really just helps you refocus your body, your mind, your spirit, your emotions. And then when you come back, you're just a lot fresher. So it's definitely really important to take those 1 or 2 days here and there. I definitely wouldn't do it very often. I don't like to do it very often, but definitely I can see sometimes where I'm on the court or I'm training and I'm like, something is just not clicking. And I said, okay, it's time for a break.
Do you cross train in any other sports?
I don't. The closest thing I would say to cross train that I do is meditation to the Buddha Bible. My grandmother, my Bongwai, she would play the Buddha Bible on YouTube. And I asked her, I'm like, you know, what are they saying? You know, what is this about? And she said, she likes to do this just to meditate. And she's not the, you know, traditional back straight, you know, yoga position of meditation. For her, it's just sitting down, listening to the Buddha Bible, taking deep breaths, closing your eyes, you know, one breath in, one breath out, and just take it step by step. And that's really what I like to include now. So, you know, I definitely did this in training camp. I had a day off. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do the Buddha Bible. So I turned off all the lights. And I played it on the speaker and I just relaxed, you know, I didn't sit up straight or anything. I was just in perfect relaxation mode. And that's probably the closest I'll get to cross training, but it's definitely, it refocuses your mind. Let's say you can't, you know, you still have practice, you know, and you just can't really get away from it, but you know, you need that break. It's definitely a good quick fix, you know, where you're like, okay, I feel pretty good. Let's get this day started.
When you were younger and you were starting basketball, at what point do you really lock in and you go, okay, this is something that I really love and I'm going to really go all out? Or was it a gradual progression for you?
I think it was a gradual progression. And the only reason why I say that is because I started really young. And I felt like I had raw talent as an athlete, you know, because growing up, I would play golf and I played tennis. And so, and I did that because I love the atmosphere of tennis. You know, I still do. Not good at the sport. Definitely don't love the sport, but, you know, just the atmosphere of being in it, you know, just hitting a couple balls here and there. Golf, I got into it because of my dad. You know, my dad and I were really, really close. My dad's my coach, trainer, mentor, father, everything. Mm-hmm. And so, when he started playing golf, I was like, oh, I want to play golf. And so then when I found out he really wasn't going to be my trainer, then I didn't want to play anymore. But I still go out and hit a little bit. And I took some lessons when I was younger. But I didn't really start to understand how much I loved basketball until I was in middle school. Because there would be times where it was a rough day. There was a lot of homework. You know, my dad, he's being so hard on me on the court, but being a father at home. And I'm just like, how am I going to get through this? But the fact that I was able to understand that you know, really processed that in my mind, that's when I knew I loved the game of basketball, because no matter what, I was still able to get up and go to the gym and still work at it, knowing that, you know, my father's going to be hard on me. I'm going against the boys. I really got to bring it. And so that's when I knew I loved it, when I was in middle school.
I always ask this with people who are professionals, like, how much of it is talent and how much of it is just raw energy, mindset, putting your heart and soul into practicing?
I think talent has the least amount of input when it comes to being an athlete, professional athlete. I think everything else is heart, is how bad you want it, you know, and it's that work ethic. And that work ethic comes within inside of you, you know, your heart. How bad are you willing to go out and get it? How bad are you willing to do a workout in the rain, in the snow, when it's just boiling hot outside? You know, how far will you go mentally to just put your body through the extreme, so when you do get out on the field or on the court, then it's just easy for you? You know, those measures definitely come into hand. And those mindsets, those mental obstacles and challenges that you face within yourself and that you're able to get through, is how you separate yourself from other athletes. You know, a lot of people don't understand that. Because, you know, they do their workouts, they go to practice, and like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, you see other athletes, they're going to practice, they're going to their workouts, then they're going to their private workouts, then they're doing their own workouts by themselves, that they needed no motivator or nothing. They just got up and did it. And, you know, that's when you kind of see, the greatness versus, you know, some average players here and there.
But that takes a lot, doesn't it? That takes a lot of faith in.
It does. But you know, I've always said, if you love what you do, then you know it's not going to be hard for you. Of course, you're going to have hard days. That's just life, you know. But if you love what you do, you'll definitely find a way to just make the most out of it. Is the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely had some rough days, and I'm like, how am I going to get through this? You know, but. It's, you know, just getting, okay, no, let me just go. Let me just keep fighting through it. And that adversity, that perseverance inside of me is what keeps me going.
All right. So let's dig into this whole soccer versus basketball. Culturally,
okay.
Soccer is a major thing in Vietnam.
For sure.
And basketball is a fairly new thing, or what's the relationship between, if there is even a relationship between the ratio of basketball and soccer? I think what I'm asking is, you know, is basketball growing in Vietnam? How, you know, what's the development look like against soccer?
Oh my gosh. Well, for one, like you said, soccer is way up there, you know, but basketball is definitely growing, and it's growing at a fast rate in Vietnam. From definitely what I've seen, I've been to Vietnam a while. And what I see is there's so many kids that watch, you know, the NBA and, you know, what goes on with LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, you know, may he rest in peace. But, you know, they watch those videos and those YouTube videos. And as a Asian American, I can, you know, and I've, you know, been raised in the States. And so I can tell when I see some YouTube video basketball drills. But it's the fact that they even look up those drills on YouTube for basketball, and they try and go apply it, you know. And I think Vietnam is really good about, they use what they have to the to like their best advantage, you know. They're outside and the hoop is maybe like 4 feet tall. They're still trying to work on their game and go score, you know. I think that's really cool. Or like, you know, in America, they're like, oh, it's 4 feet tall, I'm not gonna do nothing, you know, I want to go to a gym. But you know, they really make the best out of it. And I think that's, you know, why Vietnam is growing at a fast rate. And, you know, the Vietnam Basketball Association, the Professional Basketball League in Vietnam, VBA, they're growing. And each year it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. They're starting to get more attention from the US, where American players are coming to Vietnam to play. And that's definitely going to help the development of the Vietnamese local players or heritage players. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really excited about the VBA, but definitely soccer is up there. When the soccer game is on, like, the city just shuts down.
Yeah.
I mean, where I stay in Vietnam, in Saigon, District 1, I'm not far from Huynh Way Street. and that whole street will just shut down. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? But I think basketball will eventually get to the level of soccer. I just don't think it will beat the level of soccer just because soccer has been there for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the tradition. That's the sport. If you want to play a sport, you're going to play soccer, you know, where, you know, the States is a little bit different. You have football, you have volleyball. I don't think basketball is the number one sport in America. I do think it's football. And then I think it's baseball, volleyball, and then basketball somewhere around there. You know, it's just kind of equal here and there, but it's definitely growing in Vietnam. It's definitely growing. And I could see definitely 5 to 10 years, it's going to be pretty big.
A constraint that I think about with soccer versus basketball is height, right?
Mm.
The height of a basketball player. I mean, there's not many Vietnamese that are like tall for the most part to really make a dent in the sport of basketball in Vietnam. But I think in soccer, you don't have to be a certain height. I think even the shorter might even be more, I don't know, but more advantageous.
No, that definitely makes sense. Yes. Yes. Because, you know, I don't know too much about soccer. I played when I was little, but I always wanted to use my hands and I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I said, I don't want to play this sport. But that quickness, you know, and, you know, that's where shorter people get, you know, they're more quick than taller people. Taller people just, you know, they're long for basketball. They take up more space. Right. They're probably going to be a great defensive player. I would say in Vietnam, we have a couple of tall guys, not so much girls. You know, in the States, you hear like a 6'5 point guard. You know, you're like, oh, man, you know. But, they're tall. But if I were to compare them how they would survive at Division I level in the States, I think they would be okay. I think they have to learn a little bit more skill set. But definitely for Vietnam, they can be so dominant. But like you said, with height, you know, the Vietnamese, average Vietnamese person is probably, you know, pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say for me, because I'm a short player, you know, I'm not very tall when it comes to basketball. I've always said height never mattered to anybody.
Right.
It's just how bad do you want it, you know? And so you see, I know a couple of players that are on the national team. I'm like, wow, he works so hard. You know, he's not very tall, but he's quick. And he'll do anything to get the basketball, anything to protect the basketball and get the basketball, and most importantly, win the game. And, you know, that can really take you a really, really far way. Yes, talent can get in the way a little bit because you do have to have a skill set, you know, to really, really separate yourself. But for the most part, they work so hard, you know, and that's one thing I've always appreciated about the Vietnamese basketball culture is that they'll do anything to get it. You know, they're going to work hard. They're going to run. They're going to get stronger. And I think as Vietnam basketball, what it can get better at is bringing in players or coaches that can help with the development. And what I mean by development is skill set, which is talent. You know, they already have the work ethic. That's already there. That's never going to be taken away. But now we need to take that work ethic and develop it to talent. And now we're competing at the top, you know, with other Asian countries.
Let's talk about work ethic, because you brought that up. Is there, how much of a difference is there in the work ethic of a young American girl and a young Vietnamese girl? Is there a difference or it's kind of the same?
I would say an American girl, it's not, how do I want to put this? I would say an American girl, an American or Vietnamese, girl, the work ethic is about the same. It's not until they get to maybe, I would say like teenager, then you start to see the difference, you know, because I think when you're so young, you're just finding yourself, you know, you don't know what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You're just like, oh, let me do this or let me try this. Oh, I definitely don't like that, but I really like this, or it's really fun. No, I love this, you know, those different. But I think as you get older, and I've always, you know, because I've traveled all over the world, and the American mentality is you just keep working at it. You just keep going, keep going, keep going until you do not stop, until you get it, you know? And so I would say the American mentality is what really a lot of people chase, you know? A lot of people want that American dream, you know? They want to come to the States. They want that American dream. What a lot of people fail to realize is it's really just work ethic. And if you keep working at it, you're going to get it, you know? Like, it's when you study. When you keep studying, you're going to get it right, you know, because you just keep going. And so I would really say the American woman can have that work ethic where, you know, it's just constant work ethic, work ethic, work ethic. I think with Vietnamese women, it's more about discipline. They're going to be disciplined a lot longer than American women because it's all about, okay, if I have to keep doing the same thing every single day, I'm going to keep doing the same thing every single day because that's what I've been told to do. That's what my heart knows. Where American women's like, I'm going to keep doing the same thing every day, but if it's not going to work out, I'm going to find something else. You know, you see that difference there. And so that's something that I've definitely understood just traveling so much. And, you know, I've always liked to surround myself around inspiring women, women that will do anything in this world to get what they want, to be successful. They're not going to stop until they get it. You know, respectfully and professionally, not just out here being reckless. You know, that's definitely not something I support, but professionally and, you know, kindly doing your part to be the best that you can be for yourself and for your family and that representation. That's what I like to be around. That's what inspires me to be the best. And what I see the most is work ethic. When I'm around these women, they just work at it. You know, they're not going to take a break. They're not going to rely on anybody, but they're going to make sure that they get this done.
Yeah, that's a interesting distinction. What about teamwork? How much teamwork is happening sort of, because I know like the American sports tradition, there's so much emphasis on working together. And, you know, in Vietnam, you know, I don't know much about sports and I admit that all the time, but, you know, is that culture developed? Is it something that is apparent yet?
Oh, for sure. There's definitely a lot of teamwork when it comes to, I see it in soccer in Vietnam, but definitely, in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is definitely a lot of teamwork. It's a lot of, you know, you got to pass to make the right shot, you know, and sometimes that's really good, especially in basketball. That's really good. However, there are times where a defense of scheme can really just, you know, overplay that and just like, no, that's not how this is going to work. We're going to dictate how this is going to go and kind of force you to play some one-on-one basketball. And one-on-one basketball is so big in America. It is just unreal.
What do you mean by that? Like one-on-one, which means like there's a team, but there's usually one-on-one like in the game.
There's a team. So like for basketball, there's a team and you're supposed to play, you know, together as a team.
Right.
But there's this one person that's just like, no, I want to do it all by myself.
In America.
I don't know what y'all are talking about. Right. In America. And it's those, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but it's those athletes that just think they just have it made. And it's like, oh no, this is how I have to do it. I have to take 18 dribbles or I have to be in one spot and I'm just going to take it all by myself. No matter who is open or no matter who is helping me, I have to do it all by myself. And that's like, no, that's not what it is. But I think definitely the Asian basketball culture, not just in Vietnam, they have more of that teamwork. You know, we have to work as a team to get the best shot.
You know, it's an issue of ego, I think, right?
For sure. Yeah. Yes.
And I think Americans are much more individually driven, much more ego driven, right? I can say that because I'm, you know, I grew up here and born and raised. We have that. And, you know, I don't know, for better or for worse, that's what we culturally, we're just defined that way, right? But also I've been, you know, obviously in Vietnam all these years and it's not like that.
Yeah.
The ego is not, it's just not.
It's like not that. There. Yeah. There's no ego. And that's where I just mentioned the discipline.
Yeah.
You know, you're just being so disciplined to play as a team where they're like, you know, that American mentality, that culture is, you know, it's work ethic, but it's like, look, I built this from the ground up. So I want all the credit, you know, that's really where that that ego comes in, you know, where it's like, you know, in Vietnam is what I see a lot, you know. I was like, oh, well, she did all the work, you know. I was like, she's not getting no credit. Everybody's going to get the credit. But, you know, they're all okay with it, you know. And that's what it is. That's being humble. That's being, look, this is a team sport. So we're all going to take the credit, not just me because I made the last shot, not just me because I got the team going. No, it's a team effort and it's a team reward. When we lose, we all lose. When we win, we all win, you know. And so that's where I really love how the Vietnam basketball culture is developing into teamwork.
Okay, but be honest with me. There's got to be something to the star culture, right? That one player or the team who wants to be that one star. If everybody wants to be that one star, they're probably working a lot harder
to score, yes.
Right? So
yes,
is that fire, that missing fire, that ego that drives that one star player or all five guys who want to be the star? Is it missing in a Vietnamese basketball team? I'm just asking an honest question.
I think you're 100% right. And if you watch the VBA, and for those who are watching this, if you watch the VBA, you see a lot of that one-on-one ego from the heritage players. You don't really see them from the local players because the local players grew up in Vietnam playing Vietnam basketball. But the heritage players, they grew up, you know, in the West, you know, in either Canada or the States, and were that American, you know, mentality on how you play, that ego that's instilled inside them because that's what they grew up and that's what they've learned. And so when they bring it over to the VBA, they're trying to do their own thing. And here and there, it does work. Definitely, it does work. But I would say for it to really work, if you want to have an ego, if you want to have, no, like, I work my butt off for this. I want all the reward. I want this. I want that. You have to go about it in a different way to the local players. Because if you just kind of jump in and have that American mentality, they already have that expectation that you're from the States, so you have to be like Michael Jordan. And if you don't play like Michael Jordan, you're bad, you know? And that's not what it is. You know, people don't understand. God only made one Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. They didn't make, you know, these other Michael Jordans, but you have to go about it in a very professional way. And what I mean by professional way is including the local players, including that local talent within your American ego. And it's not easy. It is not easy because they have this expectation for you as a heritage player that grew up in America playing American basketball. And so it can get very frustrating. But if you do it the right way, it's very rewarding because then you make the local players feel so powerful, feel so, oh my goodness, I can do this. I can be that ego player. I can be that player that makes all the shots. I can be that player that every time she does this or she does that, then I make it. You know, you give them confidence. And so, but it had the very important thing, you have to go about it the right way.
I wonder if a man can think about this. It's like women have this sort of empathy, right?
Yes, you have this emotion.
I'm listening to you going, this is a, you know, only a woman can think like this, you know, like you're empathetic.
Right. And you know, I always believe that anything is possible. You know, so when someone tells me, it's not possible. Like, I'm already like, okay, well, I'm up for the challenge. Let me prove to you that it is possible, you know? I've always believed that if something is impossible, then it shouldn't even be thought of, you know? It shouldn't even enter your mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, when someone says, oh, no, it can't be done, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to prove that it can be done, you know? And especially, you know, in Vietnam, I feel like a lot of them, they have what it takes, but it's just believing in themselves. You know, and believing in yourself, that has a little bit to do with ego. You know, you got to like, hey, look, I can do this.
Yep.
You know, there's that confidence. And, you know, there's like a lot of players, you know, that I've, you know, seen or played with in Vietnam. Like, no, I can't do it. I'm like, what? Like that vocabulary just like doesn't enter my mind, you know? And I said, no, you can do it. I said, look, I said, you're doing it right now. And so they're like, oh, yeah, I am. You know, but just trying it, you know, and I'm just like, you can do this. I know you can. And so it's just how you approach, you know, that Vietnamese basketball culture is just so important. You know, I talked about this with Christian Juzang, who was a heritage player in the VBA. And I said, you know, the approach is so important. When you're coming from America, playing American basketball, and coming to Vietnam, playing Vietnam basketball, the approach has to be so important, because if it's not, then you're already looked at as an American. Yeah. You know, you're not really seen as a Vietnamese American. You're seen as an American because that's where you grew up. And, you know, that's fine. You know, that's where you learn. That's where you learn your math, your basic skills,
yeah.
Your basic basketball skills. So it's respectable and it's understandable. But it's, you know, if you approach it the right way, to where you include all of the local talent in with your ego, then the reward is going to be a lot bigger. It's definitely a dynamic that can be complex, but it's definitely possible.
It sounds very complex. Now, let me ask you this, though. Yeah. Do you make it sort of a mission to infuse some of that ego-driven? Because a healthy ego
Yeah. For sure. Because I want my teammates, I want them to feel that they can do this. I want them to feel that, you know, like I tell the boys here when I play against them, when you pass it to me, it's going up. And not only is it going up, but it's going in, you know, but it's that mentality. It's that, okay, look, I get up 500 made shots plus, not minimum is 500 made shots a day. So when I'm doing that, I have that confidence there. And so that I want to instill that into the girls that look, no matter what, you can do this. The Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, they're having that ego. Like, look, I can do this. We've been doing this. And I want that to be, you know, around with my teammates, because then it's going to be so much easier. You know, it's not going to be a struggle. Losing is not going to be the norm. You know, now winning is going to be like, okay, no, every time we step on the court, we're going to win. You know, and yes, you need some ego on the team, but you don't want too much, because if you have too much, then, yeah, you know, you're going to explode. But you need some of that, because that's part of confidence. And that's really all it is, confidence and believing in yourself. And, you know, if those girls can get that, I know COVID is really slowing things down, the country's on lockdown, but if girls can really get that, we could be so strong.
You mentioned other countries, Malaysia, Thailand, all those other countries. What's sort of like the basic ranking of the other countries for women's basketball?
For women's basketball in Southeast Asia, just Southeast Asia,
yeah,
Philippines are at the top.
Okay.
And then it's kind of Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia is making some noise. They made some noise this year. But yeah, it's really in that order. And it's, you know,
and where's Vietnam?
It's sad. Vietnam is, you know, at the bottom, but okay. I'm really hoping that I can go there and make a difference. Not being, you know, okay, no, y'all need me. No, I need you guys. You know, we need each other. You know, that's the expectation. That's the mindset I want us to have. And that's the mindset I have for myself, that I need you and we need each other. You know, it's not like, oh, Miley needs this, or, you know, it's one way or the other. No, we need each other. That's what's really important. And if I go about it that way, then I think we can be really, really good.
How long is it going to take to turn the team around, to go from the very bottom? We're at the very bottom right now.
Second to last. So we're at the bottom, but I wouldn't say the very, very bottom. Yeah.
How long will it take, and what does it take to kind of notch up?
Oh goodness. How long it would take? I really would say, I hope not long. But I think this upcoming SEA Games that we have, SEA Games 31 in Hanoi, I think we can do well. I think even medaling is definitely in the conversation. And for me, medaling is there, you know, but wow, that's just me. You know, if everybody is not on the same page, then, you know, it's definitely not going to work. I want everybody to be on the same page. I want to lead by the example that, look, if we do this right, if we work hard and we're all on the same page, we're going to medal. And so I have the expectation for me of going for gold, because still, if I miss, there's silver and bronze, you know, but I have to go for that. I have to have that in my mindset. And so how long it would take, I would like a 3-month training camp, you know, but, you know, I'm not the coach, I'm just a player.
Yeah.
I can really only give my suggestions, but there's definitely other things that, you know, fall into hand about having a long training camp. And training camp is not intense all 3 months. You just can't do that. Your body's going to get really, really tired. especially for a week and a half long tournament. But I think in maybe a year or so, I think that's where we can actually get to the level of winning is the norm. You know, right now it's not the norm. Right now it's kind of like, well, what's going on? There's a little excitement because, you know, we're getting a new coach for our national team. And so that excitement is building up. Yeah. Girls are working out, you know, during the quarantine, the lockdown, girls are, you know, finding ways to still keep their body in shape. So I think that excitement is there. And there's definitely some girls that, you know, they'll do whatever it takes. You know, there's definitely some girls that are just like, I don't know what's going on. I'm just kind of here. You know, they're just, that purpose is not really instilled inside them.
Right.
And so I think a year or so, and I think a year or so, we can start to see some progress, you know, in our rankings. And that's what, you know, you got to start somewhere when it comes to that.
Can you tell me about this new awesome coach that you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So the Vietnam women's national team for the basketball team, they're getting a new coach, and that coach is Coach David Jones. So as you can see, I borrowed his backdrop. David Jones Pro Training, which is right here, and that's his elite institution or academy. And so he trains a lot of professionals. So he was offered the head coaching job for the 5-on-5 for the national team. And for those of you who don't know, Coach DJ is my father. So it really works out. It's really sweet. It's really fun. People are like, well, I don't know how the father and daughter is going to go. I think what people don't understand is, you know, my father, we're really, really close. We've been close ever since birth. So, everywhere my dad went, I had to go. And, you know, there's been those challenges of girl dad and, you know, where the dad is the coach of the daughter. And there's been a lot of, you know, back and forth, and the daughter thinks she's right. And the dad's like, no, I'm right. We really didn't have a lot of that when I was growing up. And so I've definitely had a lot of daughters who are in my position where their father was their coach come and ask me about it. And I said, no, I didn't have that problem too much. I think when I was a teenager, maybe 15 or 14, you know, maybe three times I was like, no, I'm right. He's like, did you forget I trained you? I was like, oh yeah, that's
what,
right.
What do you think it leads to that dynamic where you didn't have a lot of disagreements with your father as a coach?
For me, because I always knew he was trying to help me. I always knew that he was looking out for the best interests.
I
try to explain it to them, and you know, I said, look, at the end of the day, he's your father. At the end of the day, you put basketball out of it, you take, you know, workouts out of it, you take practice out of it, he's your father. And I said, as a father, he loves you. And he's only looking out for your best interests. He's never going to look out for your worst interests. And because of that, you know, that's where that clash comes in, because maybe she thinks she's right. He's like, no, I'm right. What are you talking about? And it really happens in those, like, those teenage years, because I see it now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, you know, there's like this this one girl that comes to our gym sometimes, and her dad are just going at it. And I'm like, no, I said, look, he's just trying to help you. At the end of the day, he's just trying to help you. And my dad would always explain that to me, always. He just always, ever since I was little and he became my trainer and my coach, he always explained, look, I'm just trying to help you. At the end of the day, we take basketball out of it. I'm your father and I love you and I'll do anything for you. And when I really started to understand that,
right,
then there were times where I'm just so frustrated with him. I'm like, no, but I said this way. And I'm like, you know what, Miley, he's just right. At the end of the day, he's just right. And what kind of helped me a little bit more is that my dad played professional basketball. So even if I try and challenge him, I, you know, that level, he knows it, you know, and he's put years in. So I see I've actually had some girls come up to me and they say, yeah, well, my dad just played in high school. Like, what does he know? And I'm like, but still, he's your father and he is looking out for your best interest. Whether he looked it up on YouTube or read a book, he's still looking out for your best interest.
How do you think the team would take to your father? Because there's a different sort of culture of work ethics. There's a different sort of push from an American coach versus what they're used to.
Right. Well, the good thing is when I had training camp for the 2019 SEA Games in the Philippines, he actually came and did a couple practices. He coached a couple practices. So the girls were, they already really adjusted to him. Not completely, because they, you know, they didn't do his difficult workouts. You know, they did a couple, and like, for me, it was nothing, you know, but for them, they were like, oh. I said, yeah, I said, it's okay. I said, you're going to be okay. But one thing about the team is they want to learn. That's what I've noticed with all of them. They want to learn new stuff. And what I mean by stuff is like just one-on-one moves, or the fundamentals of passing, the fundamentals of dribbling, different drills. And it's one thing to look on YouTube, but on YouTube, it's just so different. You know, I've always believed if it's on YouTube, then that information isn't as useful, because if it's really valuable information, it's not going to be put out in the public. You have to go find that information. You have to go pay for that information.
Yep.
And that value of that information is going to take you far. And so the girls, and, you know, my best friend, Bit, she even told me, she said, when your dad was here, she said, I just cannot believe all the new stuff I was learning. She said, I've never learned this before. And she said, you know, she's, when she goes and plays in the SEA Games, they put her as a post. And I'm like, she's maybe a little taller than me. And I was like, oh, wow. And she's like, because, you know, she's not a post player. And she understood that. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And she said, you know, because I'm a guard and I didn't really know how to do all these guard moves. And that's where that Vietnam is growing. But we meet those players, those from the West that are Vietnamese American that could come over, or those Americans that could come over and really, really develop those Vietnamese players.
What are these young women doing on the off time? Are they playing basketball full time? How are they getting financially through all this?
They play basketball full time. And the biggest thing I've seen is they do coaching. So they coach at like a school or like a gym, and that helps financially. And they play for a city team. So there's the national team, which is the country, and you play against other countries. And then there's the city team, which is only domestic, and you only play against other teams in Vietnam. So the competition level isn't quite like international level, but it's enough to keep you in shape, keep you in a good rhythm. That's what I would compare it as and say.
And the city teams, is it like a paid audience or paid people that come into to watch?
Yeah. Yeah. They get paid. They get paid a salary to play on the city team. The salary, I don't know what it is, but, you know, they go and play in tournaments. They have like the national tournament, and the national tournament is, you know, I think they go to Nha Trang and they play. And it's all the cities in Vietnam play against each other. And then Ho Chi Minh City, Saigon, they usually win. And so the name of the city is like TPHCMC, you know, which in other words for Saigon. But that team usually wins every year. They actually just lost the 3-on-3 not too long ago to Kenta. And Kenta is pretty talented as well. I know some girls on that team. Yeah. So they lost to, but it was 3-on-3 not 5-on-5. 5-on-5, I think they win it every year. 3-on-3, I think it can get a little bit more competitive. But Kenta beat the Saigon team.
So interesting to even hear Gangta in the same conversation as basketball. Women's basketball, or, you know, just basketball, 3-on-3, right? And to think that a smaller town can overtake like a big city like that.
Right, exactly. And it's there's definitely talent in Kenta. There's talent in Hanoi. There's talent in Da Nang, Nha Trang. I mean, there's talent everywhere. Dalat, you know, but it's, you know, the fact of wanting to play at that high level, you know.
Yeah.
Play at that high level of the national team, or play at that high level even of the city team. You know, you really have to want it. And some girls, you know, they're just shy. And, you know, it's really the Vietnamese, you know, culture of, you know, I think of more females than males. You know, Vietnamese females are really shy. They're not really like, oh, am I going to go out and do it? Like, yeah, girl, come on. I'm like grabbing her hair, grabbing her hand. Yeah, let's go. You know, where they're, you know, just kind of shy. They take it step by step. They're like, oh, I'm not sure. What should I do? I'm like, no, you're coming with me. Let's go.
In your heart of hearts, what makes a champion? What makes an MJ? What makes a Kobe? What makes a LeBron?
Work ethic.
That's what separates those guys.
That's all it is. You just got to work. And you look at Michael Jordan, you look at Kobe Bryant. The reason why I don't say too much of LeBron James is not because of his career right now, but it's so much of at the time, he just has that raw talent, you know? And I think no matter what, if you're a basketball player or a basketball fan, you do have to respect LeBron James' talent. Okay. He can play. He can't, you know. Is he GOAT status? I don't know. But you look at Kobe Bryant and you look at Michael Jordan, their workouts are very similar. Their workout regimen is very, very similar. Not quite the same, because I think Kobe Bryant had a little bit more advanced technology than Michael Jordan, just because of the time. Right, you know, Kobe Bryant, you know, when he was in the NBA, there was rubber bands, you know. Back then it was like a person stretching you know, just those small subtle differences. Right. And you know, they had a STEM, but you know, STEM probably in MJ's day was, you know, maybe a really, really, really good masseuse. You know, now there's STEM, there's, you know, those little big giant boots they put on. I don't know what it is, you know. There's MJ just had the simple thing of ice bath. You know, you just fill up a bucket of ice and you sit in it and there you go. But the workouts, and those workouts come within yourself, because can you discipline yourself? Do you love this game so much that you'll do whatever it takes to be the best? You know, I think it the biggest thing I saw, which I didn't really understand until I watched The Last Dance of Michael Jordan. And he said his coach was Tim Grover. And he said, right after he lost in the finals, you know, Tim Grover came over to him and he said, you know, just let me know when you want to start. He said, I'll see you tomorrow, right after a game, after you lost everything, the season's over. He's ready to start off season right away. Is LeBron willing to do that? No, you know, and you consider, you know, Michael Jordan even has a family too at that time. And so was Kobe Bryant willing to do that? Yes. You know, and because Kobe Bryant watched Michael Jordan so much growing up when he was playing, he went to a game and watched him. And so and another thing that I thought of is when Tim Grover, his book Relentless, he said Michael Jordan paid him extra to only train Michael Jordan, to only train him. There was Dwayne Wade, and of course there was Kobe Bryant and there's some other, you know, upcoming rising stars coming up. And he said, I'm going to pay you double, triple, whatever it is, but I only want you to train me, because I don't want my opponents gaining an edge. Damn. And that mentality, that work ethic, that is what makes a champion, because they're going to do whatever it takes to win. You know, they're going to work out and do whatever it takes to be the best. When you're just tired, you know, there's definitely, I have some 3 a.m., 4 a.m. workouts, 2 a.m. workouts, and I'm just exhausted. But I know if I don't go, then I'm going to feel way worse than that, you know, extra 4 hours of sleep, you know, when I actually have to get up, you know? And so I think that's what makes a champion, is your work ethic and your mentality. Because if you don't have that, you're just going to win a couple games here and there. Yeah, you might get an award here, you might get an award there. That's great, but you're going to have no rings. You know, you're not going to know what it takes to finish the season. There's definitely going to be some up and downs, but if you finish strong, and finishing strong with the ring, with the championship in your hand, then that's what it took, was that work ethic and mentality.
It's a great answer. It's a really good answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I think about that and how I was raised and culturally how, you know, brought up for the most part, the Vietnamese experience that I went through, it wasn't so much, we didn't grow up with so much sports. A lot of us did, but a lot of us didn't really, you know, get down to that work ethic side, that really just digging down and I'm, you know, I've noticed it in Vietnam too today. You know, when I work with my factory or I work with, you know, that superior, like, we got to get to number one no matter what.
Right.
You know, that's, I think it's happening more and more now in Vietnam.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yes. And it's, you know, I say this because I get so much, not really judgment, but I get this, you know, look when I mention Vietnam. And I know why, because of history, and I get it, you know. But, you know, they think of, okay, it's not a democracy, it's not freedom, you know, it's not free over there. And I'm like, no, it's capitalist. You know, of course, if you want to go like by the book of what the government type is, okay. Yeah. But when you're there and you're living like a Vietnamese would, I drive a motorbike and I'm like, look, people will work their butt off for money. You know, I mean, who wouldn't, you know, who wouldn't? I mean, there are some Vietnamese I've met that are like, no, money is not everything. I'm just going to go live the farm. No. Life. And I'm like,
but they're more capitalistic than Americans, I think.
I think so too. I really think so too, because there's so much motivation.
Yeah.
When there's money involved, they will just go after it. And I'm like, go hard. Wow. Yep. You know, it's just like, okay, they're going to do whatever it takes. And I told people, I said, yeah, maybe this type of government, but I said, it's really capitalist, but you know, you have to be there. You know, they're definitely just going off what's on the internet and they're going off of word of mouth, which is fine. But I've always believed you can't judge a country or their culture until you actually are there living how they live, not in this 5-star hotel and, you know, this taxi or Uber or private cars taking you everywhere. No, you can't give your full opinion about a country or a culture until you've lived how they've lived. Yeah.
And I think this idea that you just talked about of champions, right? I think it's bleeding into our society in Vietnam. It's being able to visualize like MJ or Kobe saying we can get to medal.
For sure.
And there's a possibility of doing that. Then once you see that that could be done, then you can actually create systems to get there, right?
Oh, yes, for sure. Because, you know, because the game is growing and they're going off of YouTube, like I said, they're going off of Michael Jordan and they're looking at The Last Dance is on Netflix Vietnam. So I know every basketball fan in Vietnam was definitely excited for that to happen because they get to see that. They get to see Michael Jordan. They get to see him make these moves and go up and stick his tongue out and just completely dominate. You know, they get to see that. So then they see that and they want to envision themselves doing that. And really, that's where it starts from. Just envisioning yourself that you could be that Michael Jordan. Not everyone who comes from the States is Michael Jordan, but, you know, keep that in mind. You know, we are human. We are who we are. We're not Michael Jordan. Everyone wants to be like MJ, but, you know, that won't really happen. Someone might come close, but it won't happen to where you're an exact match because God only made one, you know? But we can work towards that. We can definitely work towards that. And envisioning yourself watching and practicing on a hoop or practicing on your dribble on the sidewalk right next to your motorbike, you know, right in front of your house or in front of your apartment complex. Those little things right there is what's going to get Vietnam up there with soccer, you know, as the sport. I don't think it will ever beat it because of history.
Yeah.
And soccer's just always been there. But, you know, because soccer, you just need a ball. You know, you can make your goal. You know, you just need your feet and a ball. Where, you know, basketball, you need a hoop. You have a ball, but you need a hoop, you know. Or you can make a hoop, but you still need one. But it's, you know, it's going to get there. And envisioning yourself, you know, the local players, heritage players, envisioning yourself that you can be that American caliber player. That's where it starts.
Speaking of envisioning, do you have or your father have training sort of, I think videos like Last Dance or reading material like Tim Grover's Relentless. Do you have that like injected into the training camp, or is that part of any regimen?
No, only thing we've done is a tactical plan. And the tactical plan was a really long tactical plan. The tactical plan was 36 pages, I believe, like 35, 30, yeah. And it was the regiment of what my father, Coach DJ, wanted to implement in the national team. It's really long. It is really, really long, but it's really in detail. And details matter. When you play the game of basketball, details matter. And I wouldn't say basketball, I'd say, you know, any sport, really. Right. Details matter. Those little things really, really matter. And if you skip over those little things because you're just trying to take a shortcut, you'll see you're back at square one all the time. But it's really detailed because that's what we need to do, I feel, as a national team. I've been able to practice with the national team. I've been able to give my input of what I think could be better. I can give my input I think is doing really well. And that those details is what really matters because we skip over them, you know? And for me, it's like, you know, yes, you can condition your body. What I mean by condition your body is run. That's really good. You need that cardio for basketball, no doubt. At the end of the day, we're not running track. We're playing basketball. So you got to work on your skill set, which is shooting, you know, dribbling, passing, those little details right there. How you go up and shoot, how you dribble, where should you dribble, what angle you take, how you pass, how you make the pass, where should you bounce the pass, how high should you throw up the pass. Those little details right there is what can be implemented into the national team. And I think that's what Coach DJ can bring.
When you say a 36-page tactical plan, is it just a bunch of words?
It's a bunch of words. So it's on a document, and it's in a like booklet kind of form. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any Office Depot in Vietnam, mm-hmm. so I had to find like a photocopy place.
Yeah,
and they did a really good job. But when my dad wrote the plan, I was like, he had to go to Nha Trang and do some scouting. So he said, well, can you take this and, you know, just while I'm gone, just get it ready so when I come back, I can have my meeting with Connor Nguyen, who kind of oversees the national team and basketball operations that go on in Vietnam. And I said, okay. And so I got it done and I was like, I just skimmed through it. I was like, whoa. But it's a bunch of words, but it goes into detail what can be done with the national team.
And is it in English or is it in
Vietnamese? It's in English.
Okay, so how does the details and the nuance of this tactical plan get to the brains and the visual aspect of the players?
Well, one thing that's really good is, you know, English is pretty commonly spoken in Vietnam, reading and writing, not just, you know, like me, like German, I can just understand it. Vietnamese, just speaking, you know, I'm not really, you know, I wouldn't say interested, but, you know, not looking right now to learn how to read and write Vietnamese, but they understand English pretty well. And details is when it comes to basketball, it's really about showing, you know, not so much of reading it, but can you take what was those words on a paper and can you transfer that from, mm-hmm. as a coach, transfer that to your players by demonstration, you know, because demonstration, they can see, they're looking at the details. When you point out the details, they're looking at the details. When you're looking at a detail, mm-hmm. they're looking at the details. You're telling them where to look. You're showing them on the ball how to do it, where you throw it, where to go. You're looking at the backboard. Okay, when you do this, it's got to hit up higher. And the higher is the corner, how you spin it. You know, there's so many little things that go, but that demonstration is what's so important. So a lot of, you know, people were like, oh, DJ, you know, you're going to give out this tactical plan. That's something that, you know, that's been like, gosh, 25 plus years of your knowledge of the game of basketball. And he said, not all of it was in there, but it's was more focused for the national team. So not all of the knowledge is going to be in it. But he said, what makes you a good, and this is what really made sense to me, what makes you a really good coach is if you can transform words on a page, mm-hmm. to demonstration to a player, and then they can get it right. That's what makes you a good trainer. That's what makes you a good coach.
That's the magic. Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, he's right. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And the details, everything in life goes back to the details, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Those little things of waking up early, setting your alarm, you know, laying out your clothes. What are you going to wear? You know, how are you going to look? You know, are you just going to get up and just look a mess? You know, those little things, just, you know, pay attention to life. And I think the biggest thing for me, what's got me such a long way, is smiling. You know, it doesn't take much to smile.
Yeah.
I've heard so many people tell me your smile is so, you know, rejuvenating or so like energetic and excited. And I said, you know, I always tell people a smile and a firm handshake, looking somebody in the eye, those three things right there can take you a long, long way. You know, when you say hi, you smile. You know, when you shake somebody's hand, you're firm, you look them in the eye. You know, when you're speaking to somebody, you look them in the eye. You know, it's those, you know, those, like we said, those little details right there. You know, it's like, okay, genuine person, or, you know, they mean what they say, or, you know, they're just, they have this light to them. You know, I tell people, just smile. You're going to be okay. Just smile.
Shout out to Kate Park. When Kate Park and I.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I loved meeting you guys. I'm so sorry we couldn't do something that day.
Oh no.
But
no.
Oh my gosh. It was so much fun. Yes. Yeah. Shout out to Kate Park. She's amazing. Park.
Yeah. Thank you for, she, you know, she brought it all together with us.
And yes.
When we came down to see you, that was what we felt, that, you know, the smile and the firm handshake and the aoyai, the yellow.
The aoyai. Yes. I have. I know we can't see the full outfit, but I have on one of my favorite ones, the white one. So I was like, you know, I wanted to share, you know, that part with somebody who's Vietnamese. You know, I'm usually around a lot of Americans, you know, because, you know, I'm here in San Antonio. So I'm wearing aoyai and they just like go crazy. They're like,
tell me about your connection with the aoyai. Like,
I'm an aoyai collector. I love to design aoyais. And so I'm on my 16th, 15th aoyai. And so I've been collecting ever since I was 18. So any chance I got either in Hanoi, Da Nang, Nha Trang, and of course Saigon, if I was able to get there, I would definitely just go order. And so my tailor, she tailored this aoyai. Mm-hmm. She's my favorite one. But here's what's really cool about her is she doesn't speak any English. And where she lives is somewhere you could probably never find ever. I think it was just fate and our bond that I was able to go back and find it because I met her through a friend. And so I said, wow, I really like how she makes aoyai. So I said, well, let me go back. And so I was like, okay, I searched through the address. I was like, oh my gosh. And I finally found it. And then I got there. And so she saw me. She just like kind of broke down in tears because I haven't seen her in a year. And so I went there and saw her and she speaks no English. So how we communicate is very, I wouldn't say bizarre, but you have to be, you know, maybe a little bizarre, but you have to be, you know, just kind of that, you have to have an open mind. And so the measurement is just to the T, exactly how I like it. How long it is exactly how I like it. A little long in the back, a little short in the front, but still long. Is just exactly how I like it. So she does a really good job. And I tell people, I said, look, that's my tailor. I can give up the name, but I don't know if you're going to find her because, you know, where she, you know, she does everything out of her house. And, you know, just being so honored and blessed that she let me into her home because, you know, that's somebody's sacred privacy place,
right.
You know, and she was able to, you know, create this aoyai. But that's my favorite tailor. I go to her as much as I can. And, you know, because of COVID, I really wanted to support other vendors and other tailors that were struggling because, you know, of course, Vietnam is on lockdown, as we know, and those international tourism, they haven't been able to, you know, get business. And I felt so bad. And some of my friends were on the border closing down. I said, look, I'll order 4 aoyais from you. Okay. I said, give me some time to pick out the fabric. And of course, we'll do the measurements. And I said, you know, but I always tell my tailor that's in the, I wouldn't say jungle, but somewhere, you know, I tell her, I'm always coming back to you, you know, and we don't use Google Translate, none of that, you know? And so usually it'll take me about an hour to order an aoyai, and that's before measurements.
This makes me think about, so clothes, and I think you mentioned you have aoyai line that you have been thinking about.
Yes, I'm going to launch my aoyai company in December. And so we're running into some obstacles because the aoyai is so unique and the craftsmanship of the aoyai is what's really important to me. The quality will always be there for me. Quality is so important to me, but the craftsmanship. And what I mean by craftsmanship is because the aoyai is pretty snug. You know, you don't really see any loose aoyais. You don't really, you see them kind of snug. And so when they're snug, because they're custom made, you know, that's where the obstacle I'm running into, you know, so there's different ideas that I have that I'm like, okay, well, this is how we can share it, you know, with the American culture. Cause that's really my biggest thing is if I try to launch a company, an aoyai company in Vietnam, no way I would succeed just because there's so many of them, you know, and there's so many cheap ones, you know, and well, cheap quality ones, I should say. And so, but if I bring here to the US, not only do I get to share that craftsmanship with the American females, but I get to share that, look, this is the feel of a Vietnamese woman, you know, and I'm Vietnamese American. I want to break that barrier of American, or it's an ally. I want it to be, okay, look, I'm going to McDonald's, I'll wear an ally, you mm-hmm. know? It's not because I'm going to a gala or I'm going to a, you know, a party, a really upscale party. It's not none of that. You know, it's something that you can wear, that you can share. And most importantly, that you'll look beautiful in. You know, that's really my biggest thing, is bringing that to the American culture as much as I can. You know, of course, you know, there's the crop tops. There's, you know, I want to show all this. I want to, you know, show all that. This is more of a conservative look.
Right.
And I want to, because I'm mixed, I'm a biracial person, I want to have that mixed ally. Of course, I want to have the traditional so I can share that. But I also want to have that mixture of American trends and fashion with Vietnamese allies. And I want to mix that together because then that represents me, you know. And so I've had a couple of designs here. Soon I'm going to model my first ever design that I did. And so I'm really excited, kind of nervous, cool. but I'm really excited because I've never shown this, never. People are like, I explain it to them, and they're like, oh, that looks cute. I said, no, you got to see it.
From my understanding in sports, sometimes the guys that are, and the women that are participating in the actual sports events don't make, the money's great, but sometimes it's really in the sponsorship deals. Mm-hmm. What is yes. that climate like in Vietnam right now?
As we speak today, yes. It's a very dry climate. And I mean by that is COVID really, you know, there was a lot of budget cuts, you know, so that's definitely understandable. But for a Vietnamese player, let's say they're on the national team, and let's give the men's for an example, and they're going to make most of their money. They're going to make more money than they do in the female side, just playing basketball, but they're going to make even more money outside of that with endorsements and sponsorships, mm-hmm. like you said. That climate for the men's side is really, really good. Really, really good. Because now that Vietnam is growing, those fans, those basketball fans, they see somebody
right.
that is on that, you know, big stage, you know, for the Vietnam national team. For the women's side, it's not so high. It's not so hot. It's more of like, oh, okay. Now, and I can say that, and I say this from a business side, I'm studying international yeah. business. I do school online and I play for the national team. And I say this from a business side because, and in sports, if you're not winning, you're not going to get no yeah. money. It's just what it is, you know, it's just what it is.
Keeping
you know?
It real. Yeah.
If you're not winning, no, because no one wants to support a loser.
No visibility.
You know? Right. There's no excitement for it. There's no like, oh yeah, like if we sponsored this, then this is gonna get well known. And you know, that's just what it is. And I hate to be so blunt. I was like,
true.
I'm trying to put it in a different way, but you know, that's just what it is. And so for the women's side, because losing is been so accustomed, losing is the norm. There's no expectation. Okay, yeah, the women are gonna get silver, you know, because maybe they might run into the Philippines, or they're gonna get gold because Philippines lost these players, you know. There's none of that. There's none of that talk. It's like, okay, just go because we have to go, you know, not because we want to go or, right. you know, no, the girls are going to make some noise. The girls are going to put, you know, Vietnam on the map. There's none of that topic right there. I think the men's side have a little bit more, but the men's side, you know, they do have an American coach, Coach Kevin Yerkes. And so, you know, it helps a little bit because then he teaches those skill sets to those players. So not only do those national team players have that local discipline and mentality, you know, of, okay, I got to get this done, I'm working hard, but they have a coach that can teach that American, you know, skill set. That's what's so important. And that's what people, you know, really don't realize is when you have that, you're going to be better, you know. And of course, the men's side, they have the VBA. There's no women's VBA. It's just the city team. But, you know, the men's side, they have the city team, the national tournament, and they have VBA and they have ABL. ABL has been kind of shut down because of COVID, which is, you know, that's been a lot of leagues so far. But, you know, ABL is the top, then it's VBA, then I would say, well, it's actually ABL, national team, VBA, city team, anything else under that.
Right.
And so, yeah, the men's side has it more, but, you know, this past two games in 2019, they, you know, won bronze 3-on-3 and 5-on-5. So, you know, there's definitely some potential business that can be done to where a business is going to be successful if they sponsor the men's national team. What they see for the women, we have to work for it, you know. So we have to really work hard and put our head down and get it.
That makes perfect sense, right? I mean, you know, if there's this excitement, this love for, you know, attending a game, then,
right,
you know, the big brands, or they're going to, the corporate side, they're going to see the attendance, they're going to see the numbers go up and pour money into sponsorship deals.
For sure. For sure.
So and exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm really excited. And, you know, I've never really looked at, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you're looking at the endorsement part. Like, of course, you know, bills have to be paid. That's just life.
Absolutely.
But I said, I'm not going to go about it. I'm not going to approach it in that way, because then I'm not loving how I'm not speaking of what I'm about, you know, and what I'm about is for the love of the country. You know, it means a lot to me to have this opportunity to represent Vietnam, because now it's like my grandmother, those sacrifices she made to get to the point where she is now today, it's like rewarding for her. You know, when I'm doing this, she feels so rewarded. There's a smile on her face. There's hope. There's happiness. There's the biggest thing, excitement, you know. And I'm really, you know, kind of bummed that it has to be this late in her life. You know, I wish it was definitely 10 years, 15 years earlier. Yeah. But, you know, at least she gets to share this moment with me, my Bang Wai. She gets to, you know, my Bako, my great grandmother, she's still alive. You know, she gets to share this with me as well. And my family in the village, they follow me as much as they can. They get to share this moment with me as well. And that really is where I feel so rewarded, so just butterflies inside that, you know, I get to do this, you know.
But when the sponsorship deals and the corporate, you know, corporations see it, that is also a big gift to
it is
the economics it is, you know, of Vietnam.
Right. Because then, you know, they get to see, okay, we have Vietnam is doing this. There's a female doing this, you know. And I never approach it as I'm an American. No, I'm Vietnamese American. I'm not gonna shut out my dad or my grandfather, you know, on my mom's side. You know, I'm not gonna shut them out. You know, I'm still gonna include that in there as well. But we get to do this together, you know, especially at a climate like this where there's the stop Asian hate, you know, it shouldn't even be a hashtag, you know, it should just never even enter somebody's mind. But it's a stepping stone for us to get better, to come together. You know, we're going to be in this together. You know, we just had this COVID. I know everybody's just like, oh, what's going on? You know, just kind of, you know, going cuckoo a little bit. But if we just kind of relax, Buddha Bible meditation a little bit, what Bang Wai suggested, then, you know, we kind of refocus and we go forward, and then we can be in this together, you know, and that's really the biggest thing for me.
If you were to imagine Vietnam 10 years from now, women's basketball, what do you see? What do you visualize?
Oh, I see greatness. I really see greatness. And because we get to, for me and my teammates, we get to pass down this mentality, this work ethic, this torch to the younger generation that want to play, because the younger generation is looking very bright for Vietnamese players. And even some here in the US and some in Vietnam, you know, it looks very bright. And I want to lead them by example. I want to set that example. I want to inspire them that, look, if you keep working at it, you can definitely be the best that you can be, you know, especially in Vietnam. And I think Vietnam is going to be one of those sleeper countries where you just kind of sleep on it. It's like, ah, okay, yeah, whatever. You know, losing's the norm. But no, you know, we're going to make some noise. We're going to do it professionally. We're going to do it, you know, kindly. But, you know, when we step up on the court, you know, it's just basketball. You know, we're going to play.
Who are the young Vietnamese or young talent that you see here in the United States? Are there Vietnamese women that are playing basketball at a level that you think that would that we should pay attention to?
Yes, there is one that I've been recommended by twice. I don't know her name, but she's in ninth grade. So she's got some time. I would say she's got maybe about 5 years, five, 6 years, hopefully 4 years. And so she's interested in playing with the national team. But one thing she has to understand is school, you know, because I think she's growing up in, from what I understand, she's grown up in the States. You know, it's always been, you know, if you play a sport, you want to try and get a scholarship to NCAA one, Division one, two, or three. And that way you can play basketball and, you know, school is paid for. So if she has that goal in mind, which I think how she plays, maybe she will. But, you know, everybody's different. Maybe she has plans to go play for the national team right after high school. But if she does, then, you know, I think it would be really good for her. You know, she definitely has talent. Everyone, you know, is telling me, oh, yeah, but she's small. I'm small, too. You know, and I said ninth grade, she's probably going to grow a little bit more. But, you know, she has that talent there. It's definitely there. I hope she can, you know, get her passport. If she doesn't have it, let's get that process started right now. And so, you know, my process passport was a while, but, you know, let's get that started now. So then that way, when the time comes and you want to play for the national team, then you're good. You know, that's really my biggest thing, but I don't know her name. I'm so sorry. I don't know her name, but she's in ninth grade and I think she really does have potential.
Speaking of passports, you know, you stay in Vietnam for a certain amount of time. I mean, what's like the visa, citizenship, like what's your status on all that?
So I do have my Vietnam citizenship. I have two passports. Okay. I have an American passport and I have a Vietnam passport. But it took 5 years to get my Vietnam passport. Now, this is why, because I wasn't born in Vietnam. I was born in Germany. I wasn't even born in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, that kind of threw off something. I have a U.S. passport, but wasn't born in the U.S. And I, when we explained it, I said, and I was actually born on German soil. I wasn't born on American soil. I was born in a German passport.
Do you have a German?
I do not have a German passport. Because at the time in Germany, because it was just like 2 years ago, you can now have dual citizenship in Germany. So I wasn't going to, you know, my parents weren't going to, you know, have a child that, no. With the right, you know, exactly. And so both my parents had U.S. passports, so they said she's gonna have a U.S. passport. And so and then my mom wasn't born in Vietnam, she was born in Japan, but she was born technically on American soil,
right?
Because of military. And so, you know, she got her passport, but you know, Vietnam saw Japan, so what, you know, what's this? And so that took a while. And then my grandmother, my Bong Wai, she had her birth certificate.
So lucky.
So that's really what saved me.
Yeah.
She had a Vietnam birth certificate. Once she had the birth certificate, that's all she wrote. I was definitely just open doors for everything. And so that's really what saved me. She kept her birth certificate.
Because can you play on the Vietnam team without being a citizen of Vietnam?
No, you cannot. You have to have, the national team director explained it to me. I technically, like, I'm a citizen and I can play on the national team and I have the passport, but because I don't have a card, he was trying to explain to me, I don't have a card of Vietnam, which is basically like paying taxes, mm-hmm. You know, cause I don't pay taxes in the Vietnam, because I don't have that card. That's where it's a little bit different, you know? And I think you have to be born in Vietnam in order to get that card. If you have heritage or blood, you can get your passport, no doubt. And depending on what your other passport is.
Right.
So there's some countries like, I think maybe Sweden or, I think Sweden, you can't have dual citizenship. And so they've actually have one player that's there. I think he's Danish, so it's maybe not Sweden. Some country there, around there. But he can't. He has a Danish passport, but he cannot get his Vietnam passport.
Wow.
And I know, and Vietnam could really use him too. So I'm like, dang, he's tall and he's built. I'm like, oh man, definitely use that. But, you know, it depends on what the other country is. You know, US, yeah, they allow dual citizenship. So yeah, if you do not have your passport, your Vietnamese passport, and you're an American, you don't have the citizenship, you cannot play on the national team. You need your passport. Right.
That's why you were like, talking about the young woman, the ninth grader. You're like, work on it now.
Yeah, work on it now. I think
I was like, I was so confused with that. Like,
yeah, she'll be okay because for me it was I'm 25% Vietnamese, and so I'm not even like half. And then my mom wasn't born in Vietnam, and then I wasn't born in Vietnam. And so that, and I wasn't even born in the US, you know? And so that was even like, it just threw so many people off. And so, but what I saw from video, she is full Vietnamese. So it's gonna help.
You know, your Malai and her birth certificate is like the save the day.
Yes, that was like the golden ticket, you know, Willy Wonka and them, golden ticket. And yeah, it just saved me, you know? It really did save me because I'm like, what am I going to do?
Wow.
And I'm like, I can prove it. I have my grandmother, my Bako still lives in the village, you know, there. And so she had to fill out some paperwork as well, my Bako. And so when she filled it out, as soon as we asked her, she just filled it out right away. And so she filled it out, sent it to the police, and then the police sent it to immigration.
Yeah.
And so, and then I had the birth certificate. So yeah, it was good.
You know, I look forward to the next few years of, you know, whether you're playing for the team or you're managing the team or you're coaching the team. I look forward to the manifestations that you are going to be putting into the universe for Vietnam.
Yes, I'm really excited. I want to be there as long as I can. You know, for those who don't know, I actually do live there. Mm-hmm. I have an apartment there. I go back and forth. Really, because I have family here in the U.S. And so I don't want to spend too much time away from them. But I have an apartment there. I drive a motorbike. Make sure you're safe, though. It's really fun. Well, make sure you're safe. You have to be safe. But it's really fun, you know. And I for me, I did not want to live too much of like a Westerner or a foreigner. I said I want to live as much as I can as a Vietnamese, because then I can understand the culture even more than what I do now. And that was the biggest thing for me. I don't want to take a grab. I'll take a grab sometimes. Like I'll take a grab bike. I think that is so much fun. It's actually more fun than actually driving the bike, because you get to see more, you know, when you're driving, you have to pay attention. You can't just like veer off and look.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
When he's driving, I'm on the grab bike, I'm just like all over the place. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that building was there. I drive by it every day, you know? And It's those little things for me.
Yeah.
Living there is understanding the culture is so big to me. You know, like cats are everywhere. I'm like, someone lost their cat, but you know, they eat the rats. So
it works
that helps out, you know. Yeah. Right. It works out. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope to see you. I hope this is the first of many episodes to hear
for
the development of basketball in general, and then in specifically women's basketball in Vietnam. I hope to have you back on throughout the next few years. And it's exciting. It's really exciting.
It is.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Yes, Ken, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so sorry we couldn't do it while I was in Los Angeles.
No, this is perfect.
This is really good. But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Miley.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran and Javier Proenza. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcasts. Thanks again for listening.